The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
And first pitch, crushing deep left field.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
What is going on with Corbin Burns? Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Tuesday, May 23rd. I am Frank Sample, joined by Scott White. Here's how we're going to do this. The first half of the podcast is basically going to be all negativity, just looking at pitchers who struggled, hitters who are struggling this season, and then we'll get into the good stuff, the hitters that have bounced back this year, some deep league outfielders, and much more. Before we get started, please like this video and subscribe on YouTube if you haven't already, and if you're listening on the audio side, download, follow, and leave a five-star rating on Apple or Spotify. We really do appreciate it. Let's jump in, Scotty.
I don't believe it!
Well, which struggling pitcher from Monday night would you like to start with, Scott? Because you got a bunch.
Well, you already claimed Corbin Burns, I will start with somebody else. I'll start with Gavin Stone, making his second career start here for the Dodgers. And as I pointed out when we first got word that he was rejoining the rotation, it's hard to get excited about him because his major league debut, which incidentally came on the same day that Brandon Pfaadt made his major league debut, it was bad, and not just bad in terms of result, but the changeup, which was supposed to be his make or break pitch, it was completely ineffective. I'd been saying it only got one whiff. It actually got two, but on like 33 tosses it got two whiffs, so it was, you know, it wasn't the world beater it was made out to be. And so I wasn't enthusiastic for Gavin Stone's return, and maybe my lack of enthusiasm was justified, because here in his second start against the Braves, Gavin Stone allowed 5 runs in 4 innings. He walked 5, he struck out only 1. It was ugly, an ugly outing here for Stone. But looking under the hood here, I see a few more reasons for optimism than in that first start. So 4 of the 5 runs came in the first inning. 2 of the 5 walks came in the first inning. The next 3 innings were better. But even more than that, 14 whiffs on 79 pitches, that's a really good rate. He got 6 on the fastball. He got 6 on the changeup. The stuff played up more. It was more as advertised. The walks are going to be an issue if that continues. And he was having problems with them at AAA too, it's worth pointing out. So I don't think this is, you know, I don't think this is a situation, obviously given the results, where it's like, oh, we got to pick up Gavin Stone here. Not at all. But rather than saying with this second bad start, okay, it's over and done, Stone is not going to be of any use to us ever, which is the reaction I could have following this start. My reaction is more, all right, let's keep an eye on it. Let's keep monitoring Stone. There may be something to work with here. There may be a chance still he turns into a fantasy asset. But obviously that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I had the same takeaway, Scott. It was, I think, mostly bad. I mean, lots of hard contact, yeah, and the walks here were an issue. But you point out the 14 swinging strikes on 79 pitches for Gavin Stone. That is a 17.7% swinging strike rate. The Braves do swing and miss quite a bit, but they're also one of the best lineups in baseball. So it's, I think that part of it was pretty impressive for Stone. But yeah, still kind of a mixed bag, mostly bad here through two starts for him. He's 53% rostered, Scott. We spoke about a bunch of names yesterday, waiver wire pitchers. Let's say you have Stone on your team, but James Paxton or Michael Kopech, who had that great start over the weekend, those guys are available. Would you drop Stone to pick those two up?
Yeah, no, I don't think Stone is really even, like, I wasn't prioritizing him on the same level of those guys before he made this start. And, you know, even though I'm finding silver linings to this start, it was still a bad start, as you point out. Like, there's no reason to raise, to elevate him in priority based on this start.
All right, well, let's talk about Corbin Burnes, Scotty, who had another rough outing against the Houston Astros. The Astros are getting healthy. Notable that Jose Altuve was not in the lineup, actually, on Monday. Five innings, seven hits, five runs allowed, with five strikeouts for Corbin Burnes. Four homers allowed in the start. That is a career high. Only had eight swinging strikes on 91 pitches. Obviously gave up a decent amount of hard contact. 90.5 average exit velocity against. And now on the season, a 3.97 ERA, a 1.22 whip, less than a strikeout per inning, 8.1 K per nine, with over three walks per nine. And that's basically the issue right there, is that the strikeouts have come down quite a bit and the walks have gone up. We're talking the walks per nine up exactly one walk year over year. Last year, 2.3. This year, 3.3. The swinging strike rate is down nearly 3 percentage points from 15% last year to 12.3% this season for Corbin Burnes. The whiff rate is down. It's not down tremendously, but it's down just enough on all four of his main pitches where that's how you see the swinging strike rate and overall the strikeouts drop. The cutter velocity has also been down 1 mile per hour year over year. So that's what's standing out to me so far, Scott. And I kind of wanted to transition this into another conversation about how aces in general have been a letdown this year. But before we get into that, your thoughts on Corbin Burnes and what's going wrong this year?
It's been really confounding because for the most part, he's pitched well. There have been these very concerning underlying elements that we've made reference to before. And, you know, at times I've thought about dropping him a lot more in my rankings than I have. I've dropped him from the top spot to, I think, third or fourth in my rankings prior to this start. And I was tempted to move him down more just because of, you know, he hasn't looked dominant. He hasn't overpowered hitters the way we're used to seeing Corbin Burnes do. And would there eventually be a comeuppance for that? And maybe that's what we saw here with this start. But, and you kind of alluded to this, you look at it at a more granular level rather than just the overall strikeout rate, the overall swing strike rate. And it doesn't look as concerning, you know? So his top two pitches are the cutter and curveball. He throws them combined about 70% of the time. And okay, whiff rate on the cutter last year, 28%. This year it's 25%. Whiff rate on the curveball last year, 48%. This year it's 42%. I mean, just those whiff rates on their own are still very impressive on those two pitches. And it's not like a dramatic drop from one year to the next. Same thing if you're talking about batting average against. Last year on the cutter, 213. This year, 220. Last year on the curveball, 127. This year, 130. The velocity is down on each pitch about a mile per hour, a little more than that on the curveball, actually. But the effects of that aren't showing up in the data when you're looking at it just on a pitch-by-pitch basis. Like you said, overall, you know, there's like a cumulative effect that is making it appear much more concerning. But I don't know. I look at that and it seems more than likely to me that Corbin Burnes is going to pull out of this just because it's like nothing individually is that askew, you know? That's how I kind of see it. So, I mean, should we treat him like a top five pitcher going forward? I don't know about that. But it would be hard for me to drop him out at the top 10 rest of season because there aren't, I don't think there are 10 pitchers that are slam dunk aces in fantasy. And so maybe Corbin Burnes now isn't either, but he has a better chance of becoming one than a lot of them do.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like Corbin Burnes has been this disaster. It's just relative to where he was drafted, you know, a borderline first round pick, a second round pick as either the top or the second pitcher drafted. It's, you know, an ERA approaching four. That's not going to get it done. And if you look at his last 20 starts dating back to last year as well, he struggled a little bit in the second half. A 4.12 ERA and a 1.15 whip over his last 20 starts with less than a strikeout per inning. Those are just not ace numbers. Those are not, you know, that's not even really a top 10 starting pitcher, let alone, you know, being drafted as a top three starting pitcher this season. I wanted to point out, just coming into the year, the ADP for starting pitchers, right? So Corbin Burnes was the top pitcher drafted. Just going to kind of run through like the top 10, let's say. Corbin Burnes, Gerrit Cole, Sandy Alcantara, Aaron Nola, Jacob DeGrom, Spencer Strider, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, Shane McClanahan, Brandon Woodruff. Of that group, Shane McClanahan, Strider, Cole, those guys have been great. Corbin Burnes has been okay. Like a 30 or a 40% hit rate on the top 10 starting pitchers drafted so far. I mean, I would say if you put that up against years past, that's probably pretty low. And even if you stretch it out a little bit further, Brandon Woodruff has been hurt. Dylan Cease has been a letdown. Shane Bieber, for as much as we're telling people to sell high, he mostly has been good so far this year. Julio Urias is hurt, and he was, you know, kind of a letdown before that. Zach Wheeler has been kind of up and down this year. Alec Manoah, disaster. Max Fried is hurt. Christian Javier has been good. Darvish has been okay. Gausman has been very good. Framber Valdez. That's the top 20. You're looking at less than a 50% hit rate right now on the top 20 starting pitchers drafted. And I know normally when we start up our analysis every year and we do our pitching preview, Chris will always point out that you're more likely to get a return on your investment on the early round starting pitchers, yet that really hasn't been the case so far this year. Maybe that'll change. Again, we're only, whatever, a month and a half, 2 months into the season. But it's, you know, for aces, it's kind of been a rough go so far this season overall. So I just wanted to put things in perspective that it's not only Corbin Burnes, but he has been a bit of a letdown so far this year. I don't know if you have anything else on everything that I just ran through, Scott.
Well, you bring up some good points. I'll also point out that even though Gerrit Cole has had more success than Corbin Burnes to this point, he's suffering from the same issues. Last year, Gerrit Cole's K per nine was 11.5. This year, it's 9.8. Last year, Gerrit Cole's swinging strike rate was 14.3. This year, it's 11.5. The drop in those measurements has been comparable to Burnes. And so I've kind of been waiting for the other shoe to drop on Cole as well that might necessitate a move down the rankings. But also to your point, like who deserves to go ahead of them? You can make the case McClanahan and Strider do, and I have moved them ahead of Burnes already.
Yeah, same.
You could make the case Ohtani does, even though he doesn't start every fifth day reliably. That was one you didn't mention, and I know the way he was drafted is kind of weird, so it's, you know, it's hard to say, oh, he's one of the top 20 starting pitchers drafted. Do you even count him as a starting pitcher drafted? But you can start him a pitcher, and he's really valuable in that role. You mentioned Christian Javier as one who's lived up to expectations. Yes, but also no. I mean, if your expectations for Christian Javier was big breakout, you know, competing with Spencer Strider in his in terms of, like, that hasn't happened. He's justified his draft spot, but right. You know, he's for what many were touting him to be, he's been a little underwhelming too. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, some people have asked me, okay, knowing what you know now, where the ball doesn't seem to be, the ball seems to be livelier than last year, and the shift ban may be having more of an impact on pitchers than we thought. Would you prioritize pitching early in drafts? I don't know that that's justified. I don't know if it's the high-end pitchers falling as much victim to that as anybody else, or if it's more, or if it has something to do with the crackdown on the sticky substances, which has supposedly been ramped up this year, as they've said a few years in a row now.
Mm-hmm.
But every year they say, this is the time it's really going to happen. And, you know, when we saw the clearest effects of that when it was first implemented midway through 2021, right?
Yes.
What we saw in the immediate aftermath of that, where everybody was most cognizant of it, we did kind of see flattening at the top, where the most dominant pitchers became a little less dominant. And so I'm wondering if this is a side effect of that again. It's just speculation on my part, obviously. It's always a little awkward to do because you're kind of casually accusing people of circumventing the rules, but you know, I don't think it's a big secret that a lot of pitchers use sticky substances if they can get away with it.
Hey, Scotty, if you're not cheating, you ain't trying. but yeah, just kind of wanted to put that all in perspective. It has been a disappointing start to the season for Corbin Burnes, but it has been that way for many other starting pitchers drafted in the first three or four rounds as well. Want to give a shout out here. Maybe, Scott, you know, plug your ears. If you got to go use the bathroom, get up and leave. I wanted to give a shout out to Freddie Freeman, who went 3-for-5 with his 9th home run. He added 3 RBI and 2 runs scored against his former team in Atlanta. I don't care what anyone says. I tweeted something out about it on Twitter, and like people are like, oh, does he really care? I think he cares. I think, you know, Freddie Freeman does something against the Braves in Atlanta. I think it probably matters a little bit more for him. He's batting now .328 with 9 homers and 6 steals with a .968 OPS. And entering Monday's action, he was the 5th best player overall in Roto this season. So obviously it has been a great start to the year for Freddie Freeman. A few other pitchers who got off to, who had some rough outings here on Monday. I don't know that there's anything too worrisome with any of them, Scott, but Charlie Morton in that same game, he gave up 6 runs over 5 innings pitched. He gave up 2 homers, lots of hard contact in this one. Still has a .361 ERA, a .141 whip. Obviously that's very high for Charlie Morton here. Chris Bassitt, not at his best, did have some bad defense behind him, 2 errors, gave up 6 runs, only 2 of them were earned, 3 homers allowed at the Tampa Bay Rays. And Bailey Ober, as much as we love him, he is human. He had a rough first inning against the Giants and then settled in. He gave up 4 runs over 5 innings pitched, only 2 strikeouts to 3 walks. Anything you'd like to add on the struggles of Bailey Ober, Chris Bassitt, or Charlie Morton?
I mean, Bassitt, it still wasn't, from a fantasy perspective, I know he gave up some unearned runs, but it still was a solid stat line. He still was a quality start. 2 earned runs he allowed were the first he's allowed in all of May. So there's really nothing to get too frustrated about there. Charlie Morton, he was trending the right way. He had actually gotten his ERA below 3 prior to this start. It was down to 2.85 with a high whip, as you point out. And it may be that in this new environment with the shifts gone, him being a ground ball pitcher, he's going to trend toward a higher whip. That just may be part of his profile now. Got to keep the home runs down. Of course, that was an issue for him last year as well. This was the 5th and 6th home runs he's allowed in 9 starts. So that's better. I mean, the ground ball rate has been up, so it would make sense. It's better, but I'm not sure it's quite where we want it to be for Charlie Morton. And we may just be done with the idea that Charlie Morton can be a high-end must-start pitcher for you. Doesn't mean he can't be a quality streaming option, you know, maybe on the level of, I was going to say Merrill Kelly, but that, you know, I might prefer Merrill Kelly to Charlie Morton at this point, but you know, at that level, maybe like the way we were regarding Merrill Kelly last year, I think that's fine. If you kind of recalibrate your expectations for him in that way, and based on where he was drafted, that's kind of how everybody was viewing Charlie Morton anyway. I was encouraged by the way Bailey Ober bounced back from a very rough first inning. I was worried this was going to be a total disaster start for him, and everybody was going to be mad at me for making him my top sleeper pitcher for this week. But he ended up with an okay stat line. His whip for the game was an even one. And even though he walked three, I'm sorry, it wasn't an even one, six base runners in five innings. Even though he walked three, he threw 64.4% of his pitches for strikes, which is a pretty good strike rate. He was still pretty efficient, 76 pitches to get through five innings. I think there's still a lot to like with Bailey Ober. I'm not abandoning him because of the start.
Well, I would like to apologize to anyone out there, Scott, who started either or both of Michael Lorenzen or Brady Singer, because pitching against each other in the same game, both were pretty bad. So, look.
Hey, streaming pitcher sucks. I say it every time. I did not see fit to start Singer myself, though I had to include him among the 10 sleeper pitchers. I did start Michael Lorenzen in a league or two, so that was disappointing.
Yep, he had been pitching really well, but, you know, I guess eventually, you know, things come back down to earth, and that's what happened here with Michael Lorenzen. Let's take our first break. When we return, I've got two hitters I want to talk about that have struggled big time since coming back from injury. We'll do that right after this.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere, online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/MLB podcast.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons. And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back, and a quick reminder to download and follow Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, wherever you listen to this podcast. That's our 5-minute podcast that we do Monday through Saturday, and we basically pick the highlights of the night, the biggest news, and we go over it. So listen to that in addition to this podcast. If you're watching us live on YouTube, you can scan the QR code in the top right corner. That will take you right to the podcast. Two hitters, Scott, that have struggled big time since coming back from injury. Tim Anderson went 0 for 3 with a walk on Monday. Over his last 19 games, he is batting .213 with zero extra base hits. Only one steal, a caught stealing during that time, a 69% ground ball rate, and an 89.3 average exit velocity. Let's talk about him first before we get into Michael Harris, who, gosh, I mean, people are just, they've had enough with Michael Harris. I don't really know what we could say to do with Tim Anderson. I guess, you know, in a shallower league, you can throw him on your bench. If you play in like a 10-team points league, you might even be able to drop somebody like Tim Anderson. Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if he gets back on track. But, you know, I mean, even going back to last year, he was all right last year. But when he came back from injury, once again, he really wasn't himself. So, I don't know. Latest thoughts on Tim Anderson.
Well, shortstop is kind of a weird position because in a certain league context, it's very deep. In another league context, it's very scarce. Like if you're talking a 12-team roto lineup where everybody starts a middle infielder, then you kind of have to hoard shortstops because there's just not a lot of new ones emerging. But if you're talking like the scenario you presented, a 10-team head-to-head league where there's just the one shortstop spot. And I've made this case for Carlos Correa too. Like I generally believe in Carlos Correa and think he's going to bounce back and have a nice season, but there are enough shortstops to go around in that sort of format that it's not unthinkable you could drop him. I mean, you certainly don't want to be starting him right now. And I would put Tim Anderson in that same category. His expected batting average is .285, which is actually higher than it was 2 years ago. It's a high expected batting average. And, you know, obviously the production hasn't been there, given that he's only 29. So it would be surprising if this was the beginning of the end for him. I don't think we could dismiss the rust factor. You know, he kind of had to start his season all over with the time he missed, and is competing against a bunch of players who didn't. And it might just take him longer to come around, I think. I think in those very shallow leagues, okay, there are enough options to work with that you can move on. But if anything deeper, Tim Anderson deserves your patience.
All right, let's talk about Michael Harris, who went 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. And since returning from the IL, he is batting 143 with 1 homer, 2 steals, a 20% strikeout rate. The strikeout rate actually isn't bad, but not really impacting the ball very hard. 87.2 average exit velocity. The line drive rate is very low. The ground ball rate is a little bit higher than you'd like it to be at 49%. And looking at his breakdown against certain pitches, Michael Harris is hitting just 135 against fastballs this year and .067 against off-speed pitches. Oddly enough, he's doing very well against breaking pitches, but I don't know how to explain that or you know, what that means in the grand scheme of things for Michael Harris. But I don't know, Scott, is it kind of the same thing as Tim Anderson where, you know, he just kind of had to get his season restarted here? It's people have a bunch of questions. You know, we all had Michael Harris as a bust this year. So, like, I don't know that we're overly surprised that he's struggling, but it was more so for where he was being drafted, not that he was going to completely implode like he is right now.
Yeah. And I'm skeptical that that's what's happening. Like, I view Michael Harris more as a buy. Well, it'd be funny to call him a sell at this point, I guess, when he's batting about 160. But I would be willing to buy him for 60 cents on the dollar, let's say. Because a lot of the things we were worried about coming in, the bad plate discipline, the extremely high ground ball rate, they've actually gotten better. His quality of contact this year, comparable to last year. He may be having some trouble with fastballs. I remember last year when he first came up, he had like a bad first week, and then he made some kind of mechanical adjustment, and that's what allowed him to take off. So he's shown the ability to tweak things and find himself again when he's struggling. This has obviously gone on longer than that did. But I think in the long run, you're going to be happy you held on to him if you do.
So you said 60 cents on a dollar. I'm trying to find the appropriate range here, but I don't know, like one of these hot starts, Jaron Duran, Brent Rooker, would you try and sell one of those for Michael Harris if you could?
I mean, Rooker slowed down.
Right.
So I don't even know if you could do that, but if you could, that'd be great. Absolutely.
So is Duran too. I mean, as much as I
like him. Yeah, and I consider, it's funny, I was actually writing earlier today about Christopher Morel, a good 1,400 words on whether or not you should sell high on Christopher Morel. And in there I talked about, I wanted to write about other potential sell high hitters, but I didn't find enough good candidates because a lot of them are in the same boat that I think Christopher Morel was just in, where people have been slow to buy in. And when they have, it's kind of been begrudgingly. And you look at Jaron Duran, for as hot as he started, he's only 75% rostered. So we're still kind of more in the do you add him conversation as opposed to do you trade him. But if you can trade him, I would consider him a sell high candidate. And like I just said, Michael Harris is a buy low candidate. So that would be a swap that would work for me. Sure.
How about this one, Scott? Would you give up James Outman to get Michael Harris just based on the overall numbers? Yeah. Because I know Outman has really slowed down in May as well.
Well, how far have you moved Harris down in your rankings? Because I haven't moved. Like, I probably need to move him down a little more.
Yeah, I agree.
I've been reluctant to move him. I moved him down some. I know that my last update. And it just, you know, the longer this continues, obviously, the more I'm going to move him down. But I'm probably, let me check here.
I have him at 18. So I have dropped him a little bit from where we started the year. But if you look at this range in the outfield, it's guys that are, look, Harris is not proven, but I think we can all agree he still has massive upside. But guys like Kyle Schwarber, George Springer, Byron Buxton, Teoscar Hernandez, Starling Marte, And those guys are pretty proven, and they're all off to slow starts. So that whole group is just kind of hard to rank right now.
And I have more confidence in Harris than any of them. I do wonder when we're going to get to a point where we have to move like the Masataka Yoshida. Cody Bellinger's hurt now, but Alex Verdugo, Jared Kelnick, when we have to move them all ahead of that Teoscar Hernandez, Starling Marte, and maybe even Michael Harris group. We're probably getting close to doing that.
Yeah.
But I haven't done it yet.
Hey, the cutoff is usually Memorial Day, right, Scott? So right around the corner.
I mean, with the way Jared Kelnick, he had another huge game today. He homered off a lefty. It was the second straight game that he's homered off a lefty. He's up to 10 home runs. He's still batting over 290. As of right now, in my rankings, I guess tomorrow when I update them, we'll need to reflect this. I can't say I'd trade Jared Kelnick for Michael Harris. I'd have to draw the line there.
Yeah.
But the point is, there aren't a lot of great outfielders, and so I'd still be willing to trade most of them for Harris.
All right. Well, let's get into the good performances here, Scott. This is the shift change in the podcast, and these are mostly names for deep leagues, but I brought up Marcell Ozuna recently. I wanted to talk about both him and Eddie Rosario, who had big games here on Monday, and Eddie Rosario in the month of May is hitting 270 with two homers, 12 RBI, and a 721 OPS. Marcell Ozuna in the month of May hitting 351 with six homers, 16 RBI in 15 games. More than an RBI per game for Ozuna in the month with an 1133 OPS. Seeing a lot of questions in the chat about Mickey Moniak. Is he for real? He went 2-for-4 with his third home run in just 9 games played. A former first overall pick, not just a first round pick. First overall pick in the MLB draft a long, long time ago. Still striking out a lot, though, 39% strikeout rate. And Leody Taveras very quietly has hit very well in the month of May. 2-for-3 with a run scored. And so far this month, hitting 391 with one homer, four doubles, 11 runs scored, 12 RBI, and four steals. So not a ton of power, but outside of that, producing across the board right now for Leody Taveras. Scott, more so for five outfielder leagues, what are your thoughts on the Braves guys, Moniak, and Leody Taveras?
I haven't been particularly motivated to add any of them. I see the upside in all of them, but they do seem like low probability plays. I mean, my favorite is probably Ozuna, and we talked about him on yesterday's show, kind of how I'm approaching him right now, where it's impossible to trust him. I haven't wanted to get him in my lineup anywhere, but we have seen him produce like an elite outfielder multiple times in the past, and we've seen him recover from down stretches where we were pretty much writing him off. And get back to being that before as well. So that seems like enough upside to stash him. And I think Ozuna of these four is the only one. Let's see, who did you say? Leody Taveras, Eddie Rosario, Mickey Moniak. Yeah, I think Ozuna is the only one with that kind of upside that makes him a potential stash. These others, I don't think, have it. At least not for 12-team, five outfielder leagues. It doesn't mean you can't use him as a hot hand play. I worry about Moniak's strikeouts, as productive as he's been so far. I mean, he's just striking out way too much. And obviously, every time he plays, that eats into Taylor Ward's playing time. Not that Ward has had a good start to the season, but if we're betting on who's the better going forward, I'm still going to take Ward. Eddie Rosario, they don't play him much against lefties. How much power does he have, really? I think there are some pretty clear limits to his ceiling, and same thing with Taveras.
Speaking of Taylor Ward, by the way, still 84% rostered, and he was out of the lineup on Monday. He's batting 227 on the season with a 622 OPS. The expected number is not great either. 238 XBA, 372 XLUG. What are we doing with Taylor Ward? Is he a drop at this point?
In three outfielder leagues, like I just dropped him in the podcast listeners league, the 12-team points league with only three outfield spots. I just dropped him. Lourdes Gurriel was still out there. Christopher Morel is actually still out there. I picked them both up. So that was the caliber of outfielder I was dropping him for. I mean, pretty high-end guys. But Yeah, I mean, if you see somebody who your heart desires, like I wouldn't let your preconceptions about Taylor Ward stand in the way. Five outfielder leagues, you probably need to hold on to him. I doubt you're going to do. I doubt there's enough available at that position to make him the one to drop.
Yeah, like I would be okay dropping Taylor Ward for the top sleeper hitters, right? That we talked about leading into this week, like Jorge Soler or even a Brian De La Cruz, right? And he went out and had a four hit game on Monday as well. Yep. So I think at this point you can go with kind of some, like you mentioned, the hot hand approaches over at Taylor Ward at this
point. Exactly.
Yeah. Let's get into some, I think also mostly deep league pitchers. Do any of these names matter? Luis Ortiz had a great start up against the Rangers, 7 2/3, 2 runs allowed, 4 strikeouts in that one. Josh Fleming, the overall numbers are actually okay for him so far. He went 6 innings, 2 runs, 2 strikeouts against Toronto. He's got a 3.59 ERA and a 1.31 whip, well below a strikeout per inning for him. Tommy Henry has allowed exactly 2 earned runs in 3 of his last 4 starts, and he had 18 swinging strikes on Monday. That was a career high at the Philadelphia Phillies. Tanner Houck actually looked really good at the Angels. 6 innings, 1 run, 8 strikeouts with 17 swinging strikes. And Jaime Barria, his first start of the season back in the Angels rotation up against the Red Sox. Very tough matchup. He went 5 shutout innings with 6 strikeouts, 0 walks, 12 swinging strikes on 64 pitches. That is an 18.7% swinging strike rate. Again, Scott, mostly deep league names here, but any thoughts on Barria, Tanner Houck, Tommy Henry, Josh Fleming, and Luis Ortiz?
Yeah, there's nobody here that I'm especially moved to pick up yet, but Tanner Houck is starting to look awfully interesting. The ERA is still 4.99. But the expected ERA is run lower than that. The xFIP even lower. He has been getting a ton of swinging strikes lately. Let's see, what was it exactly in this start? It was 17 on 83 pitches in this start. It was 15 on 75 pitches in his last start. So he hasn't needed a lot of pitches to get through these innings that he's throwing, and he's getting a lot of whiffs. He threw his splitter more in this start. He threw it 20% of the time. It was responsible for 6 of the 17 whiffs. It's a pitch he hasn't used a lot this year, but it has a 50% whiff rate. So if he continues with what he started here, featuring it more, then I think the upside only improves for Houck. He puts the ball on the ground a lot. I made a stronger case for picking up Michael Kopech after his last start, but I think they're in a similar spot right now where a lot of the underlying metrics, certainly like in terms of missed bats, which is the most valuable thing a pitcher can do, they're looking pretty encouraging at this point, and the forward-facing numbers just don't really back it up yet, but they could. And actually, in Houck's case, the control problems aren't as pronounced as Kopech's. So I don't know, maybe if I was making a case to pick up Kopech, I probably should for Houck too. I just don't feel like there's as much competition for him yet, I guess.
And with Tanner Houck, he's only 26% roster, does have RP eligibility, so you can use him as a SPARP on CBS. A little bit of a cheat code there in head-to-head points leagues. And you mentioned the underlying numbers being good for him. He has just a 62% strand rate, so he has been unlucky in that regard. Again, that's Tanner Houck. I wanted to mention with Tommy Henry, I don't think we're there yet with him. I think he's a name to watch, but his velocity was up over 1 mile per hour on each of his fastball and his curveball in this start. And again, a career high 18 swinging strikes. So don't think there's anything actionable yet, but let's just see where it goes. Some news and notes. Tyler Glasnow is expected to make his season debut Saturday against the Dodgers. Let's say you play in a daily lineup league, Scott. Would you start Tyler Glasnow against the Dodgers in his season debut?
Probably not. Not with that matchup, and just as a general rule, I like to give pitchers a start to prove their health, to make sure they're not rusty after a long layoff like he's had. So I'd probably shy away with it. But hey, if it goes great, hopefully we're starting him every start the rest of the season thereafter.
All right, Max Fried is close to resuming throwing. The latest hope is for Fried to return sometime around the All-Star break. He's on the IL with a strained left forearm. Josh Chisholm is taking part in upper body workouts, but remains in a walking boot because of the turf toe. Logan Webb will make his next scheduled start on Thursday at the Brewers, despite dealing with lower back soreness. Julio Urias is slated to throw a bullpen session this weekend and is hopeful to return in early June when first eligible. And I said yesterday, I didn't think he was going to be out very long, and when he returns, that means one of Gavin Stone or Bobby Miller will likely be sent back to the minors. Byron Buxton was back in the lineup Monday after sitting out Sunday with knee tightness. Eloy Jimenez is getting close to going out on a rehab assignment. He underwent an appendectomy on May 6th. Liam Hendricks looked, quote, really good in a live batting practice session Monday and is getting really close to returning to the White Sox. CJ Cron has yet to resume baseball activities. He's on the IL with lower back spasms. Clayton Kershaw was placed on the bereavement list Monday, but is expected to make his next start later this week. Justin Turner was back in the lineup Monday after missing the previous two. Seth Brown was activated by the A's. Jordan Diaz was optioned back to AAA. Scott, we spoke about some deeper league outfielders earlier. Where does Seth Brown kind of fit in that mix with Leody Taveras, Mickey Moniak, and the Braves guys?
I probably put him behind Ozuna. I think, you know, obviously he delivered a nice power speed outcome last year, albeit with a low batting average. And I don't necessarily trust him to follow through on that, but he's going to get plenty of opportunities with the A's because who else do they have? He hit a ball 109 miles per hour in his return tonight. So I think he's more likely to emerge as a starter in a five outfielder league than, say, Eddie Rosario is.
All right. Again, that is Seth Brown with the A's. Luis Urias will begin a rehab assignment at AAA either Tuesday or Wednesday, and he's 42% rostered. For those looking for versatility in deeper leagues, Urias has second base, third base, and shortstop eligibility. Nick Prado was elevated to the leadoff spot for the Royals, while Bobby Witt Jr. was dropped to sixth in the lineup, which, that's obviously not a great spot to be in a lineup that bad, so hopefully Bobby Witt Jr. gets going. Eric Lauer was placed on the IL with a right shoulder impingement. That's his non-throwing shoulder. Colin Ray will start on Tuesday against the Astros. Brendan Rodgers is ahead of schedule and has a chance to return later this season. He underwent shoulder surgery back in March. And this was very interesting, Scott. In the Twins-Giants game, Edward Julian was batting cleanup against a right-handed opener for the Giants. Sean Manaea entered in the second inning, and Julian was pinch hit for without ever seeing a single pitch in the game.
That stinks.
Nothing says development like the Minnesota Twins. I mean, he has bad numbers against lefties in the minors. I get it. But at the same time, the Twins had to know that, A, John Brebbia is a reliever, probably only going to open the game, and Sean Manaea was likely to be the bulk reliever in this start. So just very weird. And then Alex Kirilloff actually led off the game, and he was pinch hit for in the second inning. He only got one at bat. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's at least you're guaranteeing Kirilloff an at bat. By batting Julian cleanup, there was no guarantee. He'd be up in the first inning to face the right-hander. So, yeah, that's hard to justify.
It seems like the Twins were trying to out-Giant the Giants within a game against the Giants. Let's take our final break, and when we return, talk about a few bounce-back seasons here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together, we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Big thanks to those watching us live. It's well past 1 a.m. Eastern time here. 570 people watching us, so hit that like button. We do appreciate you. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. A few bounce back seasons here, Scott. I wanted to focus on bounce back hitters at that. Whit Merrifield continues to, once again, bounce back. 4-for-4 with his second home run of the season. Obviously, there's not much power at this point, but a .287 batting average, 21 runs scored, 19 RBI, and 13 steals. Whit Merrifield was ranked the 110th overall player in Roto entering Monday. Does have that second base and outfield eligibility. Lourdes Gurriel, you mentioned the name earlier, he went 4-for-4, hit his 8th home run of the season. He is now batting .321 with 28 runs, 27 RBI, a .938 OPS, a career-best strikeout rate, 14.6%. And his home run to fly ball ratio is back up to the rest of his career. Last year looks like a clear outlier, likely because of that injury that he was playing with. He was the 72nd overall player in Roto entering Monday. And JD Martinez had a huge game. He had 4 hits, including a double dong, 3 batted balls over 106 miles per hour. And in 10 games since returning from the IL, JD Martinez is batting .293 with 4 homers and a .952 OPS. Scott, any thoughts on this group of bounce back candidates? JD Martinez, Lourdes Gurriel, and Whit Merrifield.
You know, Frank, you were asking me the other day, last week, the start of last week, in the Memorial Magazine, like standard Roto League, you needed a catcher in a pinch, and you were asking for Blake Sable. Who could you offer for Blake Sable? I almost said JD Martinez, but I shied away because I didn't want to clog up my DH spot like that. I had a lot of corner infielders. Do you think a week ago you would have traded JD Martinez to meet that catcher need? Blake Sable. Waivers had already run, so that wasn't an option. You just needed a catcher as quickly as you could get one, and I had an extra one at the time.
Would I have done it? It's so hard to say coming off like this good game, right? It's like my immediate thought is probably not, but I don't know. It's hard to say back in that moment.
Yeah.
I might have done it. I think I had Grandal as my second catcher, and he was like day-to-day, and so I just needed a catcher.
Yeah. And he ended up coming back the next day.
So exactly, yeah.
Didn't really lose anything. But
what a loser, by the way. I wound up benching JD Martinez this week in that league. And so I didn't even get this big game that he had on Monday. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I mean, look, now he's got his expected batting average is .293. That's 92nd percentile. This was before the 2-homer game, actually, right? I don't think those numbers have been factored in yet.
I don't think so.
Expected batting average .293. That's 92nd percentile. Expected slug .576. That's 96th percentile. He was like hardly walking, and he still doesn't have a good walk rate, but it's gotten a little better. He plays literally every day for the Dodgers. So primo lineup spot. And suddenly I'm feeling really good about JD Martinez. Yes, I would have to say. Let's see. Who else did you mention here? Gurriel. Yeah, I feel good about him. I mean, he might be performing a little beyond what he can sustain at this point, but I think he's a good hitter. And he showed it in Toronto prior to last year. Hit for average, hit for above average power, not huge power. But I think there's definitely a chance, even in 3 outfielder leagues, he could be somebody you just keep in your lineup rest of season. And Merrifield's probably just a steal specialist at this point, but at least he's doing that again because he had kind of stopped doing that last year.
Yeah, I mean, with Lourdes Gurriel, he is in a contract year, so obviously looking to get paid, and wouldn't surprise me if, you know, he could stay on the field, hit over 300, 20 homers with great counting stats. That would be a really strong season for Gurriel. And Whit Merrifield, man, he looks like he really enjoys these new stolen base rules because, 13 steals already this season off the top of my head. doing some quick math. What, he's on pace for 40 plus steals this year. So that's, yeah, that's definitely a contributor in that category for Whit Merrifield. Let's get into some pitching standouts from Monday's action. Dane Dunning was solid at the Pirates. I didn't include him in waiver wire because he's up to 78% rostered, so likely not available in your leagues. He went 5 2/3, one run allowed, 3 strikeouts. Christian Javier makes it 4 straight quality starts. He was at the Brewers. 6 innings, 1 run, 5 strikeouts with 14 swinging strikes. And Luis Castillo needed a strong start, and that's exactly what he got. Up against the Oakland A's, 6 shutout with 8 strikeouts, 22 swinging strikes on 101 pitches. And he was saving his best for these poor Oakland A's. Why would you do that? It's so mean, so inconsiderate. Fastball and changeup were both up 2 miles per hour each for Luis Castillo in the start. Scott, any thoughts on him, Javier, and Dane Dunning?
I had hoped for more from Dunning, but I guess, you know, he's already given us so much, right? How much longer can we expect him to be of any use at all? 1 run in 5 2/3 innings. I guess we can't complain about that so much. He has another start coming up later in the week, presumably. He was in line for 2 starts last week and didn't end up happening. So his 2-start week got pushed to this week. Hopefully he comes through. And yeah, Javier and Castillo, not much to add there.
All right, some hitting leftovers. Yordan Alvarez went 3 for 4 with a double dong, added 5 RBI, and had 2 batted balls that were at least 110 miles per hour off the bat. Julio Rodriguez went 3 for 4 with 2 doubles, 2 runs scored, and an RBI. Jared Kelnick, 2 for 3 with a walk, and his 10th home run came off of a lefty that's back-to-back games with a homer. He is waking back up after a slow start to the month of May. Rowdy Tellez is quietly having a Rowdy Tellez type season. The batting average is up a little bit this year, 255 with 12 homers and an 897 OPS. We mentioned earlier, Brian De La Cruz had a 4-hit game, went 4 for 4 with 2 runs scored in Coors Field. And Scotty, sneaky sneak, I saw you in the Scott White Dynasty League. You picked Paul DeJong back up and he went 2 for 5 with his 8th home run and added 4 RBI in that game.
I'm a genius.
Against Brandon Williamson, who I started in multiple leagues because I was desperate. Gosh.
Yeah. Well, it occurred to me, because Paul DeJong was coming off this 33-point week, and I was saying on yesterday's show I dropped him even in this 2014 league because I didn't ultimately believe in it. But I had somebody else I could have dropped instead. Zach Jackson, who just got hurt. Why didn't I drop him instead? Why didn't I drop him? Why did I do that with DeJong? And you mentioned that you noticed DeJong was out there, so I assumed you put in a pretty healthy bid for him.
No,
so I had DeJong.
I didn't.
You didn't?
I don't know why. Well, I didn't. I mean, I had him
for $1 previously. Now I have him for $13. But at least I have him. And
sure.
He's still in my utility spot in that 24-team league where I am 6-1 currently.
Mm.
And you know, I'll ride it for however long it lasts, but I'm still highly skeptical of Paul DeJong, as is everybody else, given that he's rostered in 20% of leagues.
I'll tell you what, Scotty, you know what would be fun? Not just for the sake of this league, but for the podcast. If we can get a little Scott White, Frank Stanfield showdown in the championship of the Scott White Dynasty League, that would be something. Now that would be something. You're 6-1. I'm 5-2 in this league so far. So this is the first year I feel semi-competitive and lots of ammo in the tank. I've got to figure out what to do. So should be a pretty fun season. Let's see where it goes. Few bullpen updates for the Guardians. Emmanuel Class A got back on track with a clean inning for his 16th save. For Tampa Bay, Pete Fairbanks allowed a hit and a walk, but got the final 2 outs for his 5th save of the season. For the Diamondbacks, one day after hyping up Miguel Castro, he entered in the 7th inning with a runner on first and a 2-run lead. He did allow 2 hits and one of those runs to come in. Andrew Chafin later pitched a scoreless 9th inning for his 7th save. I don't know that there's much rhyme or reason with the Diamondbacks, because if you asked me heading into Monday, I would have said Chafin was kind of that fireman reliever and he would come in a situation like that. But for whatever reason, they went with Castro earlier and Chafin later on. For the Cardinals, Ryan Helsley pitched a clean 9th and then stayed out there for the 10th. that Ghost Runner. Do we call it a Ghost Runner, Scott? What's the official verbiage for that? I don't even know.
I don't know. I've seen people call it Ghost Runner. I think that just started as a cutesy thing because obviously that harkens back to the days on the wiffle ball field. But that was a very different thing. Like a Ghost Runner was not a person. There was nobody standing there. It was an invisible runner that I guess ran at the same speed as you. That's what made it a ghost. And this is not a ghost. This is an actual person who could be thrown out, unlike a Ghost Runner.
Well, guess what? This Ghost Runner was not thrown out against Ryan Helsley because he did score on a sacrifice fly. Helsley took the loss in that game. For the Giants, Camilo Doval has been used a ton recently, so he was unavailable in this one. Scott Alexander picked up his first save of the season. For Kansas City, Scott Barlow pitched a clean ninth inning with the game tied and then came out for the 10th. He gave up a walk, a single, and then a bases-clearing double to Javier Baez. Barlow took his third loss. For the Dodgers, Evan Phillips entered in the 5th inning with runners on 1st and 3rd, no outs, and a 2-run lead. He only allowed one run across. Brewstar Gratterall later recorded the final 4 outs for his 3rd save of the season. And I kind of feel like the Dodgers bullpen is kind of like the D-backs in that it's kind of unpredictable right now. I think most days it will be Evan Phillips, but Gratterall will probably get a few saves as well this year. And then for the Rockies, Pierce Johnson gave up a hit, but picked up his 9th save of the season. Let's get into streamer or not to stream, Scotty, for Tuesday. And I did eliminate Matthew Liberatore because he's not going to start. I like Logan Allen up against the White Sox. I think Brian Bello at the Angels is okay. Angels are a tough-ish matchup, but Bello is pitching well right now. Those are the main two that I like. I don't know that there's anybody else I really trust.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Bradish could deliver a quality start at the Yankees, so it's kind of a tough matchup. I get that, but he's looked good his last two outings. I think it's between him and Logan Allen, who's actually the best pitcher of this group. So I'll add him as a third name.
All right, on Wednesday, I think we both agree that James Paxton and Michael Kopech are more than streamers, but they are less than 70% rostered. So Paxton at the Angels and Kopech at Cleveland, I think both are fine. And in deeper leagues, Zach Greinke against the Tigers and Matthew Boyd at the Royals, I think are okay.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not... Kopech's the one I want as bad as the Guardians offense has been and as well as he's pitched lately. But, it's obviously not a must. It's worth reiterating that these streamer pitchers we're always making the best of a bad situation here. If you can't go Kopech, my second and third choice would be, I think, the ones you said. Paxton. Did you say Paxton?
Yep.
Yeah, Paxton and between Boyd and Ryan Weathers, who's at Washington.
Okay, let's wrap up with to stream or not to stream. And this one came from Dan on an Apple Podcast review. Wizard of Ozzy.
Sure.
From Doug. Putting out fire with Gonsolin.
Okay. Going, making, stretching to make Gonsolin sound like gasoline.
Correct. And okay. He brought up in the email, he said he brought up a spirited debate that you had with Al Melchior years ago about Michael Wacha. Does this ring any bells?
That's always the association I make with Michael Wacha. Yes, it does. At the time, I was arguing. So this was back during that run at the start of Michael Wacha's career, the first 3 years where he had like a 3.25 ERA between them, seemed to be a fantasy mainstay. That fourth year he was struggling. Al was saying, Waka's not such hot stuff after all. I was like, no, just look at his track record. Turns out Al was right. Or was he? Will I get the last laugh? I don't know. I don't even think Waka's that great now, but who knows?
Yeah. Such an interesting roller coaster of a career for Waka. As you mentioned, first 3 years were really good, and then a 5.09 ERA, 4.13. back down to 3.20 ERA. And then the last 2 years now, he has an ERA in the threes. So I don't know. It's kind of like a career renaissance.
That's our analysis on Michael Walker. I don't know.
That sounds about right to me. These are from Matt, a Paxton both your housers. A Paxton both your housers.
A pox on both your houses. That works. That's okay. That's clever.
Bybee or not Bybee? That is the question.
Bybee or not Bybee?
Yeah, I think that's probably the better way to say that. Yeah. Frambers, Romanos, Contrerasmen, lend me your ears.
That's going a little far for me.
I looked this up. I think it was from some kind of Julius Caesar, I think. Yeah, that's what it was.
It's stretching the names to make them the words.
Gotcha.
You know, it's going a little too far as that goes.
Yeah. Countrymen, Contrerasmen. Yeah, it's a little stretchy. Kirilov, my wayward son. It's a solid song. You know that song, Scott? Carry on my wayward son.
I don't think Kirilov works there. This Matt has a very liberal ear in terms of the way he hears words.
The last one is a penny for your faults.
Okay. That one's okay.
From Eric. He is a Mariners fan who was hoping for a big year from Robbie Ray and Chris Flexen. So initially the team name was Ray B. Flexen. Now it's Ray Not B. Flexen. Okay.
There you go.
From Neil, the Webbing Singer.
I mean, is that really the best use of the name Web?
Probably not. Next one is Bednar Time Stories.
Okay. I see what he's going for here. It's got a whole Adam Sandler theme just for you, Frank.
I don't know.
Bedtime Stories, it's a pretty cute movie, I have to say.
I haven't seen it, so.
I wouldn't put him in my top five Adam Sandler movies, but it wouldn't be far outside of it.
I'm trying to think of the last Adam Sandler comedy that I've seen in his filmography. And it would probably be like Grown Ups or I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. I haven't seen any of these like Netflix things or. Yeah, I saw what was the one where super serious movie Uncut Gem, but whatever. Yeah, that's not a comedy.
That doesn't count as an Adam Sandler movie.
Correct.
He just happened to act in it.
It was a pretty good movie, though. Very anxiety provoking. This one
pretty good.
Is In Ottavino Veritas. Ottavino Veritas.
I don't know that I get that one.
Yeah. If you don't, you know I don't get it. Welcome to the jungle. To the jungle. Oh my gosh. Yeah, if you didn't like the Webbing Singers guy, I don't know that you're going to like Webcome to the Jungle.
Well, he's abandoned the Adam Sandler theme. I thought I knew what he was doing, but now he's just kind of...
You have no idea.
Yeah, it's not good.
I stopped the sheriff.
All right, sure. Why not?
Teoscar Meyer Weimer.
Ooh. A lot of bad suggestions, but this might be the suggestion of the night.
Although that might be Mayer, right? Is it Marcelo Mayer? Or is it Marcelo Meyer?
I don't know. With prospects, I usually write the name. I don't say it. So when the time comes to say it, I'm a little lost.
My Bybee lies over the ocean.
Okay.
The Grandal Bednarpest Hotel.
Okay.
Bednar.
All right.
Bednarpest. Yeah.
I'll allow it.
60% of the time, it works every time.
All right.
And we're going to wrap there. For Scott, I am Frank. Thanks as always for tuning in to Fantasy Baseball Today. Please make sure to follow and leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.